Hi, this is Leonard Peikoff here to apply Ayn Rand's philosophy of objectivism to your real-life questions. My responses cover subjects of general interest, such as human relationships, career, and morality, but not current politics. For the present, my answers are posted every other week on Mondays, and Dr. Yaron Brook answers questions on current events on the alternate Mondays. You can listen to full episodes on iTunes or listen to single questions or full episodes on my website. Several years of podcasts are now easily searchable by topic or keywords. If you have a philosophical question to ask, simply go to www.peikoff.com, and that's spelled P as in Peter, E-I-K-O-F-F, like the word off at the end, peikoff.com. And of course, feel free to follow me on Facebook and Twitter. Today, we have a very good guest, adjunct assistant professor and research fellow at Southwestern Law School in LA, Amy Peikoff, expert in objectivism and in law. She has her own weekly show on Blog Talk Radio. Her subject is generally news, politics, culture from an objectivist point of view. It's every Friday from 12 noon to 2 p.m. Pacific time, and it's live in the sense that you can communicate directly with her during the show. The title is a little expansion of one of Dagny Taggart's thoughts. It is, don't let it go unheard. So if you're interested, I'm sure that you will enjoy what Amy has to say and learn from it. So I'm going to start by asking, this is going to be like a back and forth between the two of us. I want to start, Amy, by, well, thank you for coming on.
Thank you for having me on, Leonard.
And we hear that the NSA program is not an overreach, but is legal, is constitutional, that there's absolutely nothing wrong with it from that point of view. What do you say about that?
Okay, now, if you're talking about actually listening into phone conversations, there would probably be an issue under current law. The conversations themselves, unless they had a search warrant. They've been insisting that they do, but there's been indications in the stories, as you discussed, that they don't. What is perfectly legal is the only thing that they insist that they're doing without a warrant, which is gathering so-called metadata. So with your phone calls, this is the data about what phone number you dialed, at what time you called, who you called, how long the phone call was. Sometimes when it's a cell provider, where you were when you made the call. In terms of text messages, it could be to whom you sent the text, how long the text message was. If it's email, it could be to whom you sent the email, how long the email is, does it have any attachments? Not the contents, but what they call metadata, data about it. So all of this metadata is historically considered information that you share with a third party. You share that data with the telephone company. You share it with your email server. You share data with your internet service provider when you browse on the internet, right? You know, what websites you went to, how long you were there. All of this is metadata that you share with this third party. There is something in the law, a vicious doctrine, called the third party doctrine. And it says that once you share information with a third party, that information is no longer protected by the Fourth Amendment. So that if that phone company, internet service provider, email server, if that company turns it over to the government, it is not a search. It is not covered by the Fourth Amendment at all. They say, you know, in the Fourth Amendment terms, they say that you don't have a reasonable expectation of privacy in this information because you voluntarily turned it over to the third party. That's what purportedly makes all of this legal. And something that I've done recently is I've written and submitted for review an article saying that we need to get rid of this third party doctrine and saying how we could do it while still preserving our government's ability to, for example, use secret agents. This entire doctrine grew out of the type of example where they're going after someone in the mafia and they have a secret agent whom they've implanted into the mafia, and that person becomes privy to all sorts of secrets and then turns them over to the government. I think that's perfectly legitimate and that the government should be able to get that information. How do you do that, allow that, without this third party doctrine that says every time you share with a third party, it can be given to the government? That's what they've done with it. Since the 1970s, they have expanded this doctrine to go beyond the secret agent context and go to the perfectly innocent context of you sharing information with your telephone company, your bank, as you mentioned in your show recently. You know, if you give information to your bank is now compelled to turn it over to the government. So what is protecting us right now from the government just getting it all the time? Only statutes. The Fourth Amendment doesn't come into play, according to this doctrine, only statutes. So the FISA Amendments Act, the Patriot Act, these are the things that are supposedly protecting our privacy, striking the balance, in Obama's words, between privacy and security. But as we've seen, I think that the balance is entirely wrong if you think it's even something that you balance about. I actually argue that you shouldn't be balancing anyway. But, you know, in terms of all the gathering of information that they've done, there's two different ways that they're doing it. One is through this third-party doctrine and statutes that make it legal for the government to just sweep up all of this information. And the second is what you talked about with taking pictures of your license plates while you're out in public. Anytime that they can observe you in public, they feel that they can go ahead and record where you were when and put it into a massive database. And it becomes like, do you remember what Bentham said about the panopticon?
No.
So Bentham talked about a prison, and you could have the prisoner basically, or you'd have a guard right in the middle, and then there'd be kind of like fanning out from the guard all of these hallways. It would be like a huge circular construction, and all the hallways would lead to the individual cells of the individual inmates. And that at the same time, I mean, constantly, they could be watching all of the prisoners all the time simultaneously by having the guard stationed right in the middle, able to view everybody from around him. And that's where we are.
I have a lot of questions, some questions about all that. First of all, the main point to me, who started this third party? Is it Oliver Wendell Holmes or more recent?
It's probably around the time of Oliver Wendell Holmes, but I don't think it was.
It's clear and present danger, you know, a vague thing that allows them to get away with total murder. What about the fact that you have a contract with the third party, like the phone company or the internet provider, whatever, and you pay for a service as part of the contract is he doesn't reveal anything that you do. Just like you have a contract with a publisher, but the publisher does not want you to reveal how much money you're getting.
Right.
I mean, there's 1,000 contracts that you have that involve you giving information to somebody else and not hugging it to your breast. So they amount to saying that anytime you tell anybody anything, the government has a right to find out, to take it, if they can. Well, now, will I talk to another person? I've given it out to the world, right?
According to the third-party doctrine, yes.
The only way I can keep my information private is to keep my mouth shut, say nothing, and write nothing. Have no communication with anybody.
Vis-a-vis the government, yes, with the proviso that historically they have not said that contents of the communications would be covered under it. It's only the so-called metadata.
That is BS, in my opinion. You cannot draw a distinction between data and metadata. I mean, you can verbally say, well, you know, all I know is that you're at this number and you keep phoning that number and that number phones so-and-so and she's a woman, at least is listed, and he's a man and you're a man and we know from your birth certificate you're it is asinine. They don't know the exact words, but they can figure out whatever they want. if they can figure out blackmail by just combining phone calls and withdrawals, you know, and deposits. It's just ridiculous to say, we know everything about how to locate, where you're going, who you're talking to, et cetera. But of course, we don't know what you say. That's ridiculous. If they didn't know anything about what we say, how would it help them catch terrorists?
No, exactly.
It is utter insanity to make that distinction. And as you see, they didn't make that distinction. They allegedly, it's a total violation of private property and private disagreement. That idea that it'd be wrong, you know, otherwise you'd have to agree with the mafia. That's an organized crime. So any policeman, anybody could go in there and get whatever information they can.
Exactly. That's fantastic. And the distinction that I draw, you're exactly right to look to contract law as protecting privacy in this kind of situation. And so the distinction that I draw is that in the mafia situation, you have what's known as an illegal contract. It's a contract to achieve an illegal end.
Yeah.
And at common law, those contracts are not enforceable. So yeah, sure, in the mafia's contract, they have a provision that says don't tell anybody, but that wouldn't be enforceable, as none of the contract would be enforceable.
Yeah, it's really something the way they can get away with anything. Now, what about this doctrine? If it's public, the government can take it. Why is that?
If paparazzi
assault you, with pictures, you can get a restraining order. The idea that you own your own body. Why? How come the government has the right to do it?
Well, under the current law, in some situations, private citizens have been able to get this, paparazzis and things like that. There's a recent case in New York that was pretty, outrageous, which is that an artist who lived in some neighborhood, a photographer, was able to take pictures of his neighbor's kids through their open window and sell those pictures as artwork. And it was part of his First Amendment freedom of expression to be able to do this. So there's a whole mixed up idea of privacy out there and how you would handle this.
Okay, let's suppose it's still the case that whatever the rights of private citizens, the government has no right. The government's function has nothing to do with taking pictures of people or with finding out information, even if that information has been thrown in the marketplace.
Yeah.
It's not function is to get databases and get store information,
no.
Require it by any means. So even if it's brought and done in a football stadium, it's outside the prerogative of a rational government to say, well, it's in the stadium, so I can keep in my files. That's not what it's for.
Yeah. No. In a proper society, this would all be handled via our rights to property and contract.
Right.
The government would have to have a search warrant based on probable cause and particularized suspicion in order to get that information over. And if they didn't have the warrant and they're gathering all this information, then either they could be sued for trespass or they could be sued for tortious interference with contract, something like this. I go back to, Akil Amar, who you had on your radio show years ago. I would go to those historical remedies. The government should be liable for these intrusions.
So I think, in other words, the whole alleged legal defense is a total junk.
Yeah, we definitely have to get rid of this third-party doctrine.
Yeah.
And Senator Rand Paul is actually trying to propose legislation to get rid of that doctrine.
Well, that's good. He's got a lot of good things and some bad. And now, Trevor, you wanted to discuss what I said in an earlier show, a few points there.
A few things about, I think the culture at large isn't necessarily dumbed down to the extent that they all believe that this is necessary for the public good. But certainly the commentators that you hear on television have been disappointing. To me in particular, the Fox News commentators and hosts. Greg Gutfeld has been a big disappointment on this issue. Also, John Bolton, Ambassador John Bolton, whom I interviewed
one time.
Wall
Street Journal, New York Post.
Yeah.
All the Murdoch stuff.
Well, and you mentioned sort of facetiously this idea of a needle in a haystack and how ridiculous that is. They rightly champion the idea that in order to find the needle in a haystack, they think that's the right procedure. In order to find the needle in a haystack, you got to have a haystack. So the government's got to have a haystack. Therefore, we all have to just give up our metadata to throw into the haystack.
That is really stupid.
Republicans are hopeless. in the House, which is, you know, majority of Republicans, yeah. Justin Amash recently put forth an amendment that would have stopped the NSA collection of the Verizon metadata, this yeah. bulk collection of everybody's right. data. And it lost in a Republican-controlled House. Supposedly Nancy Pelosi working behind the scenes. Nancy Pelosi, supposedly a Democrat. The Democrats under, you know, when Bush was here, were fighting this stuff. But now they're all on board because you have a Democrat yeah, in power. Yeah. In terms of future hope, there is a movement called MeshNet. They're trying to create a private internet where everybody privately participates and has sort of wireless servers. And so we all participate on an internet that the government doesn't have access to.
Oh, believe me, they're going to be in on it.
Now, I want to exactly, tell you about, yeah.
about, I can't have it in front of me, but there's a poll I read very recently that allegedly about all different Americans. And there was like four or five questions about the specifics of the program. I can't remember them all, but like, do you think the government is doing a lot more than they let us know about? Yes. Do you like a government being secret? Do you have confidence in the efficacy? And that, and the public's view was universally, not by huge margin, but universally on the same side as we are. And then they asked the question, just one question. Do you approve of the NSA program? Majority said yes.
That's because they don't understand it, I'm afraid. I think they don't understand the extent of what they're doing. They don't understand how much information is conveyed by the metadata. I did have one follow-up question about Snowden for yes. you. And is there anything that you could later learn about him that he did that would make you change your mind?
No.
I'm definitely against calling him a traitor of any kind.
His action, which we know about, and its result, what kind of value it helped to preserve, is so monumental. And the risk that he took, and which he's now basically exiled for life, it can't be changed. I don't care what his motive is. Even if his motive is he's secretly behind Obama, and he thought that by revealing this, and then all the conservatives would come out against it, he'd kill the conservatives and destroy America. Even then, I don't care. What he did, in fact, made a really crucial cause, gave it a big step, gave a punch in the stomach. And for that, I give him eternal credit. As I say, I don't say he's on the go. For all I know, he's elsewhere too. But he did something really historically crucial. And for that, I give him credit. I think of him, when I think of him, I think of him positively. When I see that they want to get him back here to kill him, I think it's an outrage. The only good thing is that Obama's afraid, you know, to antagonize anybody, including Putin, so he's going to leave him there. But the Russians will probably kill him, so it's, you know.
I liken him to Socrates. You know, Socrates shouldn't have drank the hemlock, and yeah. why should he stand trial for that?
So. Well, we're probably the only two in the world.
Thankfully, not the only two, but we're in a minority.
Now, I want to get your view of one more, and then I want to utter two sentences on a radically different topic. I've been asked, where do you draw the line in whistleblowing? Do you believe that any whistleblower about anything anywhere, as far as the government is involved, is good, is moral, is heroic? What do you say to that? I would say no, but what do you say?
Well, not every whistleblower is good. And in fact, I was asked this by Bolton when I was talking to him. And he said, well, then do you agree with the people who leaked about the Manhattan Project? And certainly not. If you're talking about leaking a government program that is legitimate and geared to defending the rights of Americans, people who leak about that are wrong. Where I don't know exactly is where to draw the line. Certainly in Snowden's case, where he found that the conduct of the NSA is so egregious that he doesn't want to live in an American society where that type of thing is going on with our government. Yes, do it. But where do you draw the line between those two extremes,
well,
so to speak?
That is a tricky thing. And I don't have a real answer to that. But I would say, first, you have to distinguish between agencies which are inherently legitimate and agencies which are not. Now, agencies which are not, I think you should feel free to blow the whistle. whenever you want, on whenever you want. Theoretically, you want to make it something big, you know, and you want to be able to live with the result. But you could blow the whistle on anything in the IRS, the agriculture, the EPA, just endless, just about everything, except the legitimate functions of government. But now within the legitimate functions, I think you have to try to decide to what extent is the legitimate function being harmed by your whistleblower. And even if it's something that you don't like, but it's not that significant in terms of the functioning of the agency, I don't think you could say, well, anytime you think you don't like something, it has to be something that you think is a serious negative, contradicting the purpose of the agency.
Well,
I can't tell you, where the line is.
There's one more element too for me, and that was, Bolton's been going around saying all three branches of government have signed off on this program, therefore it's good, which is disgusting appeal to authority.
Ridiculous.
But if you actually are aware of something really egregious the government is doing, and all three branches of government have signed off on it, then going through the so-called proper channels, saying, I don't like what's going on here, report it to my supervisor and his supervisor, et cetera, that's going nowhere.
That's very good.
So,
if you're forced into a position.
Right, right.
That's
where Snowden was.
Nothing happens and it goes on, or you have to break the law.
Right.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
That's a very good point.
Right.
Very good. I still think there could be tricky cases where it's a legitimate agency, and it might be hurt by you doing this, but it might be a major. I think in this state of the country, I would tend to err on the side of anything that exposes what the government is doing. Not battle plans, obviously.
Right.
Okay, well, I want to thank you. I want to, though, before you go, if you wouldn't mind listening to 2-3 sentences of mine. There are two issues that are major. And I want to utter one sentence on each. Only one sentence, because I don't want to deal with them. But I have to say something because I think they're an outrage. One on the Zimmerman case, I want to merely say how horrifying it is that from the president on down, there's this assault on the white guy who was found innocent because he's white. And the other guy is black, even though a jury verdict has come in. Now, on the counter to that, I just want to mention, this is my other sentence, I guess. How about this recent case where a 13-year-old boy, white, was assaulted by two black 15-year-old boys and hit, it's a video on the computer, hit 100 times with a full fist, smashed, disfigured, his face can never be, nothing, he's wrecked. Did you ever hear one word from any media, from the president, from the Justice Department? Are they looking into the possibility of a hate crime? I mean, it just goes to show the corruption, the lying, it's beyond discussion. How rotten our media and government is beyond discussion.
I agree.
And now the other thing I want to say, which I know is going to come as a bombshell to objectivists, and that's too bad. You can stop listening as far as I'm concerned. I am against the immigration bill 100%, not just one clause or another, for one very simple reason. It happens to be the case that we are teetering on the edge of a dictatorship. It happens to be the case that if the Democrats continue to have or grow their political power, we will be over that edge. And it happens to be the case, whether you like it or not, that of all Hispanics in America, whether they are rich or poor, self-made men or anything else, 80% are reliably and continually Democratic. So if you are talking about a bill, I don't care whether it's fair or unfair in any other respect, you are talking about a bill which will infuse into this country a massive amount of Democratic supporters and thereby guarantee the destruction of this country. That is what immigration means today. And there's no use asking me in theory, what do I think? There is no theory now. We're on the end. So it's a question of buying time. That's it. If you want to know more about Ayn Rand's philosophy, I invite you to ask me a question. I can't answer them all, but I do read them all. Just write to leonard@peakoff.com. And if you haven't already done so, start by reading Ayn Rand's two most important novels, The Fountainhead and Atlas Shrugged. And I might add that it wouldn't hurt you to read my latest book, The Dim Hypothesis.